I'm Catherine Ident, and for Mindy Todd, welcome to The Point. Today, our monthly gardening talk with horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning.
Good morning.
We are welcoming your calls and emails this hour, 866-999-4626, or email us, thepointcapeandislands.org. Well, Roberta, it is raining outside today. As compared to last summer at least, we've seen a little bit more rain. But has it been enough rain, or are we just seeing clouds?
We've had a fairly wet summer. Although the past, I'm going to say, 4 weeks, it's actually been somewhat dry. We've had days where, like today right now, where it's sort of gray, it's spitting, it's drizzling, it's misty. But if you have a rain gauge, you're going to see there's not a lot accumulating in it. So it's from probably the latter part of July. Up until now, I've had to institute my what I call the sprinkler regime. It takes me 2 days to water everything in the yard, and I just have this like rotation. I know how long it takes to put down a certain amount of water, and so I've been doing the rotation, and it's a lot of work.
I imagine it is. And is it something that you think you institute most summers, or do we have summers on the Cape where you don't need to have a sprinkler regimen?
This year has been actually great. June and most of July, I absolutely did not have to use the sprinkler, except occasionally, particularly in the vegetable garden when I was seeding things or putting transplants in and you needed to keep things moist. The problem with the type of summer we've had is that this is the perfect weather for disease problems, and it's just it is a problem. Like today, coming down here, sometimes I'd have my windshield wipers on, sometimes they'd be off, sometimes it was just water being splashed from the car in front of me, but not a good ground-penetrating rain. We did on Saturday at my house in Marston's Mills, we had just shy of 3/4 of an inch. So that was a good rain, but we hadn't really had a good rain for about 10, 12 days before that. But we'd had days where it was wet.
Right. So. I know. I think when you think back, it almost feels easy to think, oh, we've had a lot of rain. But if it's just sprinkling and making things damp
right.
and not actually getting into the soil, it's not doing much for the things that we're growing.
That's just right. Yep.
But you mentioned that disease, it loves this type of environment. So what are you seeing right now?
Well, in the vegetable garden, I have to confess I was very lax on managing blights on my tomatoes this year. Consequently, I have both early blight and Septoria leaf spot gangbusters on my tomatoes, particularly at my plot down at the community garden. And it's really too late to do anything in terms of managing it other than removing as much of it as I can, harvesting tomatoes quickly, maybe even letting them ripen on the shelf so that they're not getting infected, because both of these organisms can also cause rots in the fruit. And of course, we don't want that.
No, of course not. That's wrecking that lovely vegetable and fruit that you want so badly to harvest and eat. You mentioned that it's kind of too late for you with blight, but when you start to see it in your garden, maybe earlier in the season, what can you do?
Well, if someone has been on the ball, they've probably been using an appropriate material. There are a lot of biological fungicides that people can use these days that, if you are using them regularly, you can't really miss a beat on that. They have nice, clean tomatoes. There is a gardener in my community garden that has been treating tomatoes on a weekly 7 to 10 day basis with a biological fungicide. And the tomatoes are lovely. The leaves are green. There are no spots. So you have to start early and you have to be consistent, particularly when we have wet seasons, not necessarily rainy seasons, but wet seasons like this year.
A big distinction there between rainy and wet.
Yeah. There really is. A lot of people say, my goodness, we've had so much rain. Well, I keep track of it because I have a rain gauge. No, we haven't. June, yes. In early July, it seemed like all it did was rain, particularly on my days off from work.
Right. I know, right? When you want to be outside.
Yeah, so I got a late start because of that. However, I one thing I'm finding very strange this year, a lot of my friends, in fact, I was talking with Dan Tridle about this before the show, we've both noticed the same things. Both of us are having bumper crops of ripe tomatoes, whereas we're both hearing from friends and companions that they're not getting ripe tomatoes.
Huh.
So it's very strange, kind of a weird year. Tomatoes are, a ripe tomato is a function of warm temperatures.
Okay.
And we've actually had somewhat of a cool summer. I'm loving it. It's my temperature range. Mm. I can work outside in the upper 70s, low 80s, no problem. But tomatoes really want it hot to ripen well.
Ah, and that might explain. My father has a big garden in East Sandwich, and he gave me some tomatoes about a week or so ago. But he said, put them on the windowsill for a few days.
They'll ripen up.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't look quite ripe, but they were beautiful shape. And they ripened up beautifully, and they were nice and sweet.
Yeah,
they were
wonderful.
But yeah, he's got quite a few tomatoes, and they're all green, or they were at least a week ago.
That's the one thing about tomatoes. You know, we in the winter, if we dare buy them, they're usually red, but they're kind of hard and mealy because they've been picked totally green, and then they usually give them a blast of I think it's ethylene gas, which forces a color change. They're not really ripe, but they look it. If you pick a tomato green, it will stay green, and you can make piccalilli or fried green tomatoes or whatever. But if you see the color change begin, it goes from green to a lighter yellowy color, and then you see faint pink and red. You can actually pick it at that point and put it on the shelf, and it will ripen and still be delicious because the ripening process has already begun.
Ah, I see. And those are precisely what he gave me.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And they were wonderful. We just sliced them up, put a little salt on them, and kind of let them be the star of the show. So
I picked one the other day. It's a variety I've been growing for a couple of years now called Kosovo. Interesting story behind this variety. During the conflict in the Balkans, a UN worker brought seeds home of a tomato and gave them to his father. And his father's been growing them, and so now the seeds are out in the public domain. And it is a giant tomato. And I picked one. I took a picture of it and put it on Facebook with a peach, a full-size peach next to it. It totally dwarfed the peach. I mean, the thing must have weighed close to 2 pounds. One tomato.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, how did it taste?
Oh, it was fabulous. Oh. Just fabulous. With salt, that's it.
Yeah. I love that in the summertime. And, of course, as you said, in the wintertime, it's just...
Yeah, no, they're tennis balls that look... They're painted red. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have our first call, and it's Larry in East Ham. He's on the phone. Hi, Larry.
Good morning.
Morning. I'm calling because we bought a laburnum tree about 8 foot tall in the spring, and it had beautiful blossoms on it. But ever since then, the leaves have gotten in very bad shape with what I think is a fungus. We went back to where we bought it, and we saw that the trees that they hadn't sold that were still there also had the same thing on the leaves. It's pretty much everywhere. It looks right now like the tree is going to die. I've used Serenade on it, I think 3 treatments since this happened, but I don't see any improvement, and I'm wondering if Roberta has some thoughts about this.
Yeah, it does sound like it's one of the leaf spotting or leaf blighting fungi, and you know, laburnum is subject to one of those. I can't think of the name of it or off the top of my head anymore. But when we have wet springs into summer, we also have corresponding foliar problems. The Serenade, if you started using it after the fact, it's not going to be totally effective. It's a great biological fungicide for preventative care. But once a disease has been initiated, it really won't do much to halt its progress. And no fungicide, even chemical ones, are what we would call curative. Nothing will make it go back to looking like it did before it became infected. But leaf spots rarely kill a plant. They may kill the foliage, but they don't necessarily, some do, but most don't infect the wood. So I would just make sure if you planted it this year, you still should be giving it a deep soaking, not on the leaves, but on the root system, a deep soaking once a week.
We've done that a few times, but I guess we should do that some more.
Yeah, it's been dry since, we've had a lot of wet days, but it's actually, if you look at soil moisture, it's been on the dry side since late July. So a good deep soaking. Most plants need about an inch of water a week. That's sort of the sort of general rule of thumb. And we certainly have not had that for several weeks. I keep looking at the rain gauge when it's raining, and if we have, you know, 0.04 of an inch, we've been lucky, except for last Saturday. We had a good rain last Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, so deep soaking once a week, no fertilizer. You don't want to fertilize a sick plant. You know, but keep giving it a good deep soaking right up until the time the ground freezes, and it should be fine through the winter and come out next year. And because you did have a problem this year, when the leaves fall off, make sure you rake them up and dispose of them to get the spores off of the area. And you also might next year, when it starts budding out and leafing out, start your serenade right as it leaves out and continue through the season. Should be fine.
Okay. Well, that sounds hopeful, and we'll get the soaking going.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Larry. Well, it sounds like what we were talking about a few minutes ago, too, in that once you start to see blight on something,
it's almost
too
late. Yes.
Yeah, it's tricky. We have an email from Christopher who has found some stink bugs on his squash and is asking, what controls are there to control stink bugs?
Yeah, stink bugs, it's called squash bug. They're kind of ugly-looking critters. Their eggs are very interesting. They lay them in clusters, and they look like little bronze bullets on the leaf. They're tiny, but they're bronze, and they don't squash. I mean, I love eggs of insects like Colorado potato beetle that you can just wipe out with your thumb. These you can't. And these funny little gray immature stink bugs hatch out, and there's always tons of them. They're a sucking insect, and they penetrate the stems and the foliage with their mouth part and suck out plant cells. They also inject an enzyme which breaks down cells, so leaves sometimes wilt. It's almost too late now because they've actually been out for some time.
Mm.
There are a number of biological insecticides, organic insecticides you could use. Spinosad will work well. However, you have to be careful when using spinosad that you don't put it on anything that's flowering. When it's wet, it will affect bees. Once it's dry, it will not. But that will control squash bugs. They're kind of nasty to hand pick. The other thing, the trick that I used to use a long time ago, would be to take a flat board, you know, just like a 2x4 or something like that, and lay it on the ground in the squash patch. And if you go out in the heat of the day and lift it up, they're all clustered under that seeking shelter. And I would spray them there.
Ah, so get them to congregate, right. And then you can kind of wipe them out.
Wipe them out at once. Yes, exactly.
We have on the phone Christina in Edgartown. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning.
Okay.
What's your question?
I apologize if I'm a little behind because I just tuned in, but I heard the tail end of the tomatoes discussion, and my tomato plants are beautiful and healthy and well over head high, and they're loaded with tomatoes, and they have been for about a month now, and they are green as the day is long and show no signs of changing.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you mentioned this, but Roberta?
Yeah, this is, it's a really weird year. I have so many tomatoes right now. Of course, I planted 33 plants. That could be why. and they're all starting to, they took a long time, but for about 2.5 to 3 weeks now, I've been picking like crazy and giving them away to neighbors and friends. But then I have other friends who have lots of tomatoes, but they're green. As I said to Catherine, ripening is a function of temperature, And for some reason, I guess it just hasn't been warm enough for a lot of the varieties. But be patient. Mm. I think Labor Day, you're going to be inundated with tomatoes.
Yum, yum, yum. And Dan in the studio is saying that he has a lot of tomatoes, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your call, 866-999-4626, or shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We need to take a break, but stay with us. We'll take more of your calls after a break. Welcome back to The Point. I'm Catherine Ident, in for Mindy Todd, and we're talking all things gardening with horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626, or you can email us at capeandislands.org. Well, we've talked a little bit about blight and things that are hurting our plants and trees and veggies, but tomatoes are ripening, or hopefully will be ripening.
That's
on
right.
The vine. What else is peaking right about now?
Oh, my Lord, zucchini. I can't pick it fast enough. Zucchini and summer squash. One variety in particular, if you only have space for one type of summer squash, I highly recommend a variety called Zephyr. It was developed up at Johnny Selected Seeds in Maine, and it looks sort of like a cross between a summer squash and a zucchini. It's the top part is yellow and the base is green.
Oh, wow.
And it's very firm. It has wonderful nutty flavor. It's great sautéed or steamed or thrown on the grill or however you like your squash. It's just a wonderful squash. And it is amazingly productive.
Oh.
Just amazingly productive. I can't keep up with it. So I it's down at my community garden, not in my yard, and I have to go down there every couple of days just to harvest it. Otherwise, they turn into baseball bats.
Yeah, they do. They get so big on the vine.
And they're great for making zucchini bread, but how much zucchini bread can you make and eat?
Your friends will start to say, uh-oh, Roberta's coming. No thanks.
Exactly, exactly. So that's they're peaking. Green beans are coming along really well. Some people are having a great success with cucumbers this year. Unfortunately, the cucumber beetles wiped mine out, so I'm not doing well in the cucumber department. As I walk around my yard, it was a fabulous year for hydrangea.
It was
a great year for hydrangea. And while our beautiful blue hydrangeas are going by to a certain extent, some are still looking really good. I like them when they're starting to dry out and they change into that sort of papery blue, purple, greenish color.
Yeah, they fade in a very pretty way.
And if you like to dry them, that's the perfect point, excuse me, at which to cut them and dry them. But what's peaking right now are the hydrangea paniculata, the panicle hydrangeas, the white hydrangeas. They get to be fairly large when they're mature, with big cone-shaped white flower heads that turn to sort of a mauvey pink color as they dry out.
Oh, that's pretty.
They're very nice. There are a bunch of smaller, newer ones, dwarf varieties that are on the market, Little Limelight and Little Quick Fire and stuff like that. So if you're getting pressed for room, as I am, I look for dwarf plants because I don't have room for big plants anymore. So
right. They're
looking great.
I love the names of these different plants too, and you know, just like you think, how it's kind of like paint colors too.
Exactly.
How did they come up with that? And also great advice too, if you love hydrangeas and the more traditional ball shaped ones are kind of fading, you know, you can be strategic and have this other type in
your yard
so you're going to continue to have some beautiful
blooms.
Those white ones are really, really pretty.
Another shrub that I really love, and it could be much more widely planted on the Cape, is Vitex, also called the chase tree. It's a large shrub, and it doesn't even begin to leaf out until well into June. You think it's dead, you know, because we're sort of at the northern limit of its hardiness zone. And then it leafs out, and starting about a week ago, it has these beautiful blue spiky flowers that are absolutely gorgeous. I passed one coming down on Woods Hole Road on the left-hand side of the road, and I go, someone's growing it. It's wonderful. I have one in my yard. It took a hit. You had a really bad winter, 3-4 winters ago.
Yes,
we did. And there was an awful lot of dead wood in spring, so I pruned all that out. Now it's back to the same size it was before it took that hit. And bees love it. Butterflies love it. It's just a gorgeous bright blue shrub in the landscape right now.
I'm going to have to look for that on my way home from work today.
Yeah.
I come to work in the dark, so I can't take a look on the way in. We have a couple people on the phone. Let's hear from Jane from Falmouth. Jane, thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning. I just drove all the way to New Bedford to a great nursery in the middle of a parking lot called Klein's. It's been there for years, and there was nothing left. It was gone, but it actually was open about five or six weeks ago.
What's the name again?
Lance.
What's the name again, Jane?
Oh. Klein's, K-L-E-I-N-S, nursery.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that. I used to go to Haskell's in New Bedford all the time, and then, of course, Alan passed away. Apparently, it's a public garden now.
Right. It's almost across the street from it, next to where Building 19 was. It was open at that time. It's in the middle of this ugly parking lot, and it has great perennials, annuals, goes right into the fall. And about 5 or 6 weeks ago, I got a whole load of plants, and now they're gone.
Wow. They're gone in your yard?
All by mine. And then maybe you'll post it if you hear anything.
You bought the plants and the plants died, or the nursery is gone?
The nursery disappeared.
My goodness.
Huh.
No signs or anything. It looks like they're developing the area.
Oh, that's sad.
That is sad. Well, thanks for calling in with that, Jane. We appreciate your listening. And we have Henry on the phone from East Ham. Henry, how are you this morning?
I'm well, but my radish is not so much.
Oh.
I grow here in East Ham, very sandy, so I grow on our southern exposure lots of plants in containers, and I recycle that container material year to year. And so I put it in a regular kind of rectangular planter for the radishes, and I grew a crop starting maybe April, and those were pretty successful globe-type radishes. But the second crop, and this is the common experience for me, they don't develop. They kind of lay on top of the soil. So I just put another planting in maybe 2 weeks ago, and I said, well, I'm going to try white radishes, and I'm going to plant them deeper, and I'm going to fertilize them from the bottom and water them from the bottom, hoping that the roots and the radishes will go down, and they're laying on top of the medium as well. So I don't know what to do about, that's the first question, my radishes.
Yeah, radishes aren't a summer crop. I think that's probably your problem. They love the spring. They like the cooler temperatures, daytimes in the 50s and 60s. Actually, they actually prefer somewhat chilly nights, low 50s. And they also grow quite well in the fall. I'm planning, hopefully I'll get around to it. I seem to have wonderful plans this year that often go astray. But I am planning to put in more radishes on Labor Day, on that weekend. And hopefully I'll be picking them. Radishes take about 40 to 45 days. So I can pick them in October. And they'll be quite nice because it's cool but sunny days. We have such a fabulous growing season in the fall. Cool but sunny days, and somewhat the nights are getting a little bit chillier. So I think the problem is they just don't like the summer weather. They're definite cool season crops, so spring and fall.
I'll mark my calendar for
There you go.
Try again in September.
Here's the other problem. I have been growing in kind of my little fake earth boxes, 5-gallon buckets, inverted flower pot, big flower pot in the bottom, drainage hole, and fill it up. It gets water automatically. And in each of those growing containers, I have about a dozen of them around a small retaining wall for where there's more garden in the ground. But in these, and they get automatically watered, but they can't get overwatered because of the drainage hole. And in each one, I put typically one pepper plant, and then in the front of trail, one cucumber. And I like the Diva variety, and I did that this year. But in past years, just in that garden on the retaining wall, I've had some butternut squash, volunteers. So I figure, well, they're doing so well as volunteers, I will plant some up there. Well, now I have not one cucumber, vines all over the place, and I have butternut squash where I...
Nope. We lose you there?
The season, the plants when they're young. So my question is, can a cucumber and a butternut squash crossbreed? In other words, did I plant cucumbers and then did they get?
Yeah.
And I'm getting butternut squash.
Well, no. If you plant a cucumber seed, you will get a cucumber. If you plant a butternut squash, you will get a butternut squash. But if you save seed from the cucurbits, I don't know that a pumpkin or a squash can cross-pollinate with a cucumber, but they can with other squash. So when you save seed from plants or if they volunteer, they might be different from what the parent plant was. But if you actually planted a cucumber seed, you should have a cucumber plant.
So
for fresh seeds for this year, both the butternut squash and the cucumber, so... But not one cucumber. It's just awful.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I'm having a terrible year with cucumbers. The ones at my community garden plot were taken out by the cucumber beetle. The ones I have at home, I didn't know I had cucumber beetle until it was too late. So I've only picked 3 cucumbers so far this gardening season. And I love cucumbers, so I'm very disappointed.
Well, maybe better luck next year.
There's always next year.
And actually...
Mark my calendar for Labor Day.
There you go.
And, you know, actually, it sounds like if you kind of know, obviously, what to plant when, radishes, as you mentioned, you can, obviously, they love the spring, but you can try them again in the fall. What are some other things that you can plant right about now? Or is it too late for most things?
Actually, it's not. Right now, today is what, the August 16th? 15th. Oh, Ferragosto, if you're Italian. Mid-August. They have a big celebration. Ooh. Where they put a big table out in the streets and all people come and sit down, and it's a wonderful communal meal. I like Italy. Right now, you can plant peas. They, like radishes, don't like hot weather, but by the time they've germinated, they'll germinate quickly because our soils have warmed up. They'll be developing and producing in the cooler weather of fall. You can also plant spinach right now. Same thing. You will get a fairly quick germination, but as the plants are developing, the days are getting shorter and they're getting cooler, and you'll get a beautiful crop of spinach. One interesting fact about spinach, many plants, their reproductive cycle is governed by day length. And so while spinach is a cool weather crop, it's also governed by increasing day length. So if you plant it too late in spring, rather than getting a great crop, you'll get a small crop and then it'll bolt to seed because the days are getting longer. So if you plant it right now, days are getting shorter. We're heading into a cooler season. You'll get a beautiful crop of spinach in the fall. And if you use a variety called Bloomsdale Long Standing, plant an extra row and don't harvest it. It will go dormant over the winter, and you'll have fabulous spinach in April.
Oh, I love it. I love the idea of growing some classically spring veggies in the fall, nice crisp, fresh things to have on your table.
Other things right now, I'm a big fan of escarole. I make this Italian dish with escarole and pancetta. Everything's good with pancetta. And now's a great time to plant escarole. It's a great time to plant the bulb fennel, radicchio. So all of those types of crops, the soil's warm, the seed will germinate quickly. They'll be developing in the cooler weather of September and October. You can get a very last crop of beets in. You probably won't be picking them till late October. You could put in carrots, and as the ground begins to cool down in late October, if you mulch them heavily, you can pick them well into winter, Swiss chard. So the gardening season's not over. There's a lot you can still put in the ground.
There really is. I'm thinking now about some shrubs. Now, we talked about how hydrangeas, the kind of traditional hydrangeas, we're seeing them kind of fade now. But what about planting them? Is there a window of time that's best to plant them? Is it too late in the season to plant things like that if you're kind of landscaping your yard?
Yeah. Today, most woody plants are grown in containers. And actually, from now until mid-October, it's a wonderful time to plant shrubs and small trees because the ground is warm. You're not really disturbing the roots by digging them up, you know, cutting them. If it's in a container, you prepare a great planting site, dig the hole only as deep as the root ball, you know, measure from where the flare is at the top of the nursery pot, and that's how deep you dig your hole. But dig it wider than necessary because roots grow sideways, not down, so to speak. It's a great time. Again, warm soils, you have to water well because we're not in a regular deep drenching rainfall yet. Usually that starts coming in September. But it's a great time because the soil is warm. Roots will continue to grow up until early October. So plants will become well established and go through the winter fine. And many garden centers are having sales right now. So
yes.
It's a great time to visit your favorite local garden center and see what they got.
Yeah. Oh, that's good advice. I'm thinking of that for myself because my fiance has a nice piece of land that could use some nice shrubs and different,
you know,
ornamental things. And I wondered, you know, you see everybody doing it in the springtime mm-hmm. and you do, your mind shifts at the end of summer toward other things, but that doesn't mean that you can't get out there and those plants will be okay. Won't be money
wasted.
It's
true. I do a lot in the fall, starting usually late August, early September. I go out in my garden every day. Even when it's wet, I'm out there. I may just walk around and look at things, see what's happening. But I'm taking mental notes. I should probably take a pad out with me and marking what did well, what didn't do well, what is in need of dividing, what areas maybe need some help. And so starting in early September, I'll do dig and divide and transplanting. Again, with transplanting, because the ground's still warm, you can dig up small plants. I don't do transplant large plants in the fall. Keep them moist, they'll do fine.
866-999-4626, or you can email us thepoint@capeandislands.org. Roberta is here to answer all of your gardening questions. I have another question about shrubs. If you're buying new shrubs and putting them in, what do you recommend for spacing? Those shrubs that you get and those containers
tiny.
Are little and they look so empty.
Yes, and the instinct is to plant things too close together. I speak from personal experience. You can plant close together when they're small if you know that within a year or two, you're probably going to be going in there and moving and spacing things out. A better solution, I think, is to, you know, go online or consult a good reference book, if people still look at books these days, and see what's the mature size of this particular plant. If you're putting in a dwarf shrub, I put in a lot this spring of some dwarf hydrangeas. A great one that I really am enjoying, I put it in 2 years ago, is it's a lace cap called Tough Stuff. And it gets about 3 feet high and 3 feet wide, and it's a beautiful, reblooming lace cap. It's really a great, tough plant. And I put two of them fairly close together, and this year I had to move one of them. So, you know, read the labels that come with plants. If you can, plant them the appropriate distance apart. You know, it will tell you on the label, it will tell you online or in a good reference book. And just use, you know, annuals to fill in the gap. Because, you know, sometimes you put in shrubs at the proper space, and if they're small, just kind of looks dinky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got a shrub and a lot of mulch and then another shrub. So, you know, fill it in with annuals or perennials that you can then move in subsequent years. So there's always room for more shrubs.
All right. 866-999-4626. Email us, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll take more of your calls when we come back from a break. You're listening to The Point. I'm Catherine Ident in for Mindy Todd, and we are talking with horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626, or send us an email with your questions, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have Sheila on the phone from Wareham. Good morning, Sheila.
Oh, good morning. I have a question about a small hydrangea plant I bought.
Yes.
And it's just recently produced a sort of pale, pale pink flower. What can I do to make it turn blue?
I'm assuming it's one of the mop head type hydrangeas that you would like to be blue. What you can do, there are a couple of things. It's the color is governed by two things, the amount of aluminum in the soil and also by the pH. So if you've been liming your garden and the soil is kind of a sweet soil, it will cause it to be pink. So you can sprinkle some garden sulfur on the soil, which will acidify it. Some people like to use a product you can get at a garden center called aluminum sulfate, and you mix it up in a bucket of water, and you drench the soil system, the root system, with the aluminum sulfate solution. You don't put it on in the crystal form. You have to make a solution with water. It won't change the color this year, but next year they should be. It should be quite blue.
Does that help you, Sheila? Oh,
yes, I'm still here.
So that's what I would do. Either use some garden sulfur or use some aluminum sulfate dissolved in water.
Okay, thank you very much.
You are quite welcome.
Thank you for calling, Sheila. And Roberta, we got an email from Richard who's just asking you to name again the spiky blue shrub on Woods Hole Road that you mentioned being so pretty.
Vitex, V-I-T-E-X. The common name, it's a chaste tree. And it's closer to where you first come onto the Woods Hole Road near Falmouth, Main Street Falmouth, just a little ways down, heading towards Woods Hole. It's on the left.
Well, thank you. Thanks for writing in, Richard. I have a question about quince. That's a special kind of fruit tree. Can you grow that kind of a fruit tree around here?
Yes, you can. If you can grow an apple tree, you can grow a quince tree. Not too many do. It's kind of an old-fashioned fruit. Some people used to call it a hairy pear. It's sort of a pear-shaped fruit. You can't eat it raw. It's just bitter and nasty. It can only be eaten cooked into pies or jams and jellies. But yeah, if you can grow an apple tree, and apple trees do grow on the Cape, you can definitely grow a quince.
Mm.
It's generally ordered. I don't know any local nurseries that would carry it. They might, if you talk to the nursery manager at your favorite local garden center, they might order it in for you, but I would plant it in April. You can definitely get it mail order from mail order fruit nurseries. They get big. I don't know if there are any dwarf quince, but certainly it will grow quite well here.
Yeah, I think of it as a food. It's almost a fall thing because
yes.
It's in like a paste or a jam, something
right.
You might put on toast or with cheese or something like
that.
That
sounds yummy.
Yeah, making us hungry. Rose of Sharon, a lot of those are in bloom right now. Are they an easy plant to care for?
I think so. They're really sort of a rock-solid woody shrub. I love them. They're in the hibiscus family. They have that lovely hibiscus-type flower. They're in bloom for a fair amount of time, 2-3 weeks. They come in white. They come in pink. They come in shades of blue. Some have like a deeper color for an eye. The one thing about them is they get kind of big.
They do.
They get kind of big. So you have to make sure you give it adequate space to grow. They also want full sun. They don't grow that well in the shade, so they want full sun. There are some dwarf varieties that are out there. I picked up one this year. I can't remember its name, but it will only grow 4 feet.
So, oh, that's a nice size.
So that's a nice size. 4 feet tall and about 3-4 feet wide. So, and it's beautiful pink. It was in a little teeny tiny pot, and it had, when it finally bloomed, it had one beautiful pink flower on it. So it's planted where it gets full sun and has room to grow.
My fiance has one next to his mailbox, and we've had to trim it several
yes.
times. A postal delivery person has written us very polite notes, and I've helped him. But wondering, can you move them?
Well, you can. You can move them in fall, sometime in September. If they're really big, though, you're going to be losing a lot of the roots when you do that. So you can also move them in like late winter, early spring before they leaf out. That's probably a better time. I transplant when I have time to transplant, but I find the bigger plants seem to do better when you do them in like late March, early April.
Okay, so I'll tell them to keep it there for a little
while. Keep it for the winter.
Yeah, it has a lot of beautiful blooms on it right now. Yeah. It really is a beautiful plant. We've got a few calls on the line right now. Diane from Brewster, good morning. Thanks for giving us a call.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. I'm finding the show very informative.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
I have a question for Roberta. We have a lot of chipmunks and mice that continually eat our tomatoes, take bites out of our zucchini and cucumbers, and I wondered if you had any way for us to combat that.
Chipmunks are the bane of my existence. They live in my wood pile. They particularly enjoy the cherry tomatoes. I've actually caught a chipmunk climbing my tomato vine and sitting on a thick branch and eating sun gold cherry tomatoes. I have not, to be perfectly honest, found a very good solution for them. I have had people say that they select tomatoes that they think are going to be beautiful and they absolutely want to keep. They buy those little gauze gift bags that you buy that have like a drawstring at the top. You can order them online, and they literally put their tomatoes in a little gift bag. And because it's gauze, it stays warm and it ripens.
Light gets through,
and it ripens beautifully. And apparently the chipmunks don't want to chew through the gauze to get to the tomato. For squash and cucumbers, I'm not sure if there's any solution. Most people don't let their cats run wild anymore with, once we started getting lots of coyotes on the Cape, people who love their pets can make them indoor pets. So you can't rely on neighborhood cats to take care of the problem. But it's kind of I try the gauze bags. Maybe even a paper bag would work because the fruit itself doesn't need sunlight. It just needs warmth.
Thank you for your...
Thank you. I will try the gauze bag.
Thanks for your call. We have Mary who wrote in asking, can an established Russian sage be transplanted without killing it? She is an old one that unfortunately was planted too close to a holly tree many years ago.
So it's probably not getting full sun anymore. Yes, I find it's like very much like a woody plant. Even though we classify it as a perennial, I would wait until, don't cut it down this fall. Wait until spring, probably sometime in April, and give it a very generous root ball, the biggest root ball you can physically move, and keep it moist. Once you've transplanted it, it should be fine.
All right. We have Janet on the line from Mashpee. Thanks for giving us a call.
Hi. I have a problem with it, but I didn't do it. I have the most beautiful hydrangeas, and my son, who lives in Barnstable, would like to know why they have them the color they are. They are almost like a royal blue, and it's nothing I've done. The only thing that's strange or different is they're growing in a whole big patch of Lily of the Valley. And I don't know if that's what affected them to make them so dark, but we can't remember them ever being so beautifully dark before.
Isn't that...
His seems to be that color, too, and his are this very pale blue one.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Depending on variety, the blue can be different types of intensity. Again, as I mentioned the caller a little bit earlier, the more acidic the soil is, the deeper the blue is. So I think that if you maybe got some aluminum sulfate or your son got some aluminum sulfate at a local garden center and mixed it up with water according to the label instructions and drenched the root system, and next year his should be fairly intense blue. Although I have to say there are some varieties.
Right here
in Mashpee, and I'm looking at an awning which is almost the same color as mine.
Wow, that's wonderful. I do have to say there are some varieties.
It's blue on the barbacoa anyway.
Yeah. If he's growing a variety called Endless Summer, it is always going to be pale blue. It's not going, even if you acidify the soil, it's not going to deepen.
Okay, so it sounds like the trick here, as we know, which is so cool with so many hydrangeas, is you can kind of work with the soil to encourage color, but you also have to pay attention to the species that
that's
you're planting
correct.
As
yep.
well. Okay, so we have an email from Judy who says she made a mistake 4 years ago of planting a Pinus strobus.
Yes.
Am I pronouncing that correctly?
White pine.
Okay, it's 3 feet tall by 4 feet wide. And she says it's too close to a Shasta viburnum, which is like 7x7.
Yes.
What's the best time to plant that pine?
Yeah. It sounds like she has one of the dwarf varieties that stay, because a regular white pine will get, over time, huge. Old mature ones in the forest can be 120 feet. So if this is 3x4, it's one of the dwarf varieties. There's a one called Minimus. There's another one, I think, called Soft Touch or something like
this
that.
This is a Soft Touch.
Soft Touch, yeah. I would probably transplant one or the other, and I would probably do it in early spring. And that way you can space them out. So I would probably transplant the pine because the Shasta viburnums will continue to grow. They eventually will get even bigger than 7x7. Hmm. Again, unless you're doing one of the dwarfer varieties. Shasta may be the dwarf variety. Mauricii is the big one.
So it sounds like when transplanting that, if you can wait to spring when things haven't budded,
right, while they're
leaves,
still dormant.
Yeah,
yep.
That's
mm-hmm.
the best time to
I
do
think
that.
So.
Looks like we have time for about one more call, and we have Joan from East Harwich on the line. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning, ladies. Beginning of July, I was over at the Harwich Community Center, and I saw a tree over there that I did not know what it was, but I was interested in it because it was swarming with bees, and I took one of the leaves and one of the flowers over to Crocker's nursery, and David Crocker identified it as an American linden, and I found out that there were several in Chatham, and he told me there were a few in Dennis, but he hadn't seen any in the nursery. Do you know of any nursery where one could get this tree?
Well, linden is planted as a landscape tree, but usually it's the little leaf linden or the European linden, not the American linden, which is the native species. I have not seen it. I would call your local nurseries, or perhaps David could do a special order for you next spring. You'd probably have better luck finding it as a small tree online from native plant nurseries.
Oh, good.
Well, thanks for your call.
I was telling somebody at the bank about it, and some man piped up that he'd like to buy one, too, if he could get one.
There you go. Bees do love it.
Yes, it's called the bee tree.
Yep.
Nickname.
Yep. Great tree.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I have a question that has come in, and it's, what is the best way to kill greenbriars? And we just have a minute or two left.
Oh, there is no good way to kill greenbrier.
Disappointing news.
Keep cutting it. Pull that big root out.
Just keep
at
it.
Keep at it.
Wear gloves.
Oh, definitely. Long sleeves.
Okay. Well, how about poison ivy?
Poison ivy, it's controversial, but the best material for poison ivy is Roundup. And it's applied any time now until late September, mid-September. It's translocated down to the root system and kills the whole plant. But Roundup itself is a controversial material. Some people are very much against it. Other people use it. I take no stand.
You take no stand. Are there alternatives out there if you don't want to use Roundup?
Well, the problem is there's nothing that really goes down and kills the roots.
And that's what you've got to get.
That's what you got to do.
So much to do yet in the garden.
That's right.
Lots of things to plant. Lots of great things to be eaten and to be looked at as we go through the rest of August. Thanks so much for coming in this morning, Roberta. That's horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. And she visits us the third Tuesday of every month. Thanks so much. We'll see you next month.
Yep.
I'm Catherine Iden in for Mindy Todd. Thanks for joining us.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.